Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why? Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 128, Persistent Claims. There is always more to be discovered out there, and some seemingly wacky ideas do sometimes turn out to be true, even if most of them don't. So it is worth giving almost anything a hearing, and if that same idea keeps popping up, then maybe there's something in it. Maybe. Dear Cheap Astronomy, is there anything new about Planet 9? Well, not really, and there is some growing scepticism about whether it's really there. Nonetheless, its original proponents, Mike Brown and Konstantin Batygin, are still sticking to their guns, although both agree that Planet 9's existence must be considered speculative until it's actually observed. Mike Brown discovered Eris in the inner Kuiper Belt, which was probably the key factor in Pluto subsequently being downgraded from a planet to a dwarf planet, hence the title of Mike Brown's book, How I Killed Pluto and Why It Had It Coming. Konstantin Batygin is pretty good at math and has done a lot of mathematical modelling of orbits and stellar systems, and once wrote a paper on how stellar disk evolution can be modelled using Schrödinger's wave equation, which could be the subject of a future podcast episode if we can ever get our heads around it. Anyhow, Brown and Batygin proposed that an observed clustering of orbits of a number of relatively distant Kuiper Belt objects called etnos for extreme trans-Neptunian objects may have come about due to a larger object having gravitationally herded them into such a cluster. Brown and Batygin then mathematically modelled what kind of mass and orbit that larger object would have to have, and concluded that you'd need an object of around 10 Earth masses following an elliptical orbit that would take it around the Sun once every 9,000 years or so. The existence of such an object did seem to fit well with a lot of known features of the solar system. So, being both an intriguing idea and one that couldn't readily be refuted, Planet 9 then settled into the public consciousness as a real possibility. It's highly unlikely that an object as big as Planet 9 is supposed to be could have formed as far out from the Sun as where it is, since the further out from the Sun you go, the less material is available to accrete together into a planet. Instead, Brown and Batygin proposed that Planet 9 must have formed somewhere within the current range of the known planets and then been ejected outwards via gravitational perturbations arising from various movements amongst the other planets. This proposal does require some fine-tuning, whereby you have a planet pushed well out of its previous orbit, but not pushed quite hard enough to be ejected from the solar system altogether. Such an outcome is entirely possible, but it's also fair to say it is statistically unlikely. But most of the growing doubt about Planet 9 arises with regard to the allegedly anomalous clustering of those etno orbits. Firstly, the cluster can only be considered as anomalous as the rest of the Kuiper Belt is not anomalous, and we don't yet have a comprehensive data set about the entirety of the Kuiper Belt. If it turns out that we find another unusual clustering of different orbits, are we then going to start hypothesising there's a Planet 10? Or might we instead acknowledge that our current understanding of the Kuiper Belt is a bit naive and incomplete, given that much of it still lies beyond our observational range? It's also been proposed that the Etno cluster is a result of observational bias, since the only reason those Etno objects have been detected is because they are all in the perihelions of their orbits, that is, the parts of their orbits where they are closer to the Sun and hence observable to us. There could be a whole bunch of other objects in elliptical orbits that are currently invisible to us and that we may not observe for hundreds or thousands of years to come, because all of them are in the aphelion parts of their orbits. And of course, there are new sky surveys being undertaken all the time, which are not only not finding Planet 9, but also not finding any new evidence of its supposed perturbing effects. Nonetheless, for now, it remains the case that Planet 9 could still be out there, and all we need is one observation to confirm that. Let's just say there is a growing number of professional astronomers who aren't holding their breath, waiting for that to happen.
This is the middle bit.
Of course, having said all that, we don't want to suggest there isn't anything new to discover in the Kuiper Belt or elsewhere. It's just that given the extent of our current data about that region, it's more likely that we'll discover something totally unexpected than to verify any current speculation. Of course, we could be wrong, but here's something we're pretty confident about. Dear Cheap Astronomy, is Nemesis really out there? Continuing the theme of hypothetical solar system bodies, Nemesis was proposed to be a small, dim, and hence difficult to spot companion star of the Sun. Its existence was proposed in 1984 on the basis of a perceived 27 million year cycle in mass extinction events, where anything cyclical gets people thinking about orbits, and with a 27 million year periodicity, you need a pretty big orbit. Nemesis proponents suggested it and the Sun orbited a common center of mass and were separated by an average distance of 1.5 light years. Since then, the various parts of this proposal have been the subject of much debate and also skepticism. For a start, there's the premise that the Sun, like most other stars, should have a companion star. We've previously stated in this podcast that there are a lot more stars in binary and other multiple star systems than there are solitary stars. This remains the favoured view for bright stars, where somewhere around half of the bright star stellar systems are solitary stars. But that means the other half of all systems have multiple stars, and therefore most bright stars have companions. However, more recent detailed surveys of the harder-to-spot red dwarfs have found that nearly 75% of red dwarfs are solitary, and since red dwarfs are about 75% of all the stars in the Milky Way, and probably the universe, it apparently isn't the case that most stars have companions, even though it still seems to be the case that most sun-like stars have companions. Anyway, after all that, we can still say it's possible the Sun could have a companion star, but there's no immediate reason to think that it should or that it does. Doubt has also been cast on the claimed periodicity of mass extinction events. Currently, there are only 5 or 6 agreed upon mass extinction events over the course of life on Earth, and not all of them were asteroid related. The 27 million year periodicity claim is a popular topic of popular science writers, but it's not obviously a widely held view of professional scientists. Essentially, there are hints of a regular pattern in the fossil record every 27 million years or so, but they're not really mass extinction events, which are defined as times when you lose 75% of all extant species within a 2 million year time period. Indeed, the original paper by Rampino, Caldera and Zhu claims that there's a 27 million year periodicity in geological events, only some of which are extinction events, others are sudden widespread volcanism, sea level changes, and tectonic plate shifting. The periodicity in these events could still point to some space-related cause, but it seems the mass extinction line has been a little exaggerated by the popular science writers. There are also other astronomical options to Nemesis. For example, it's been suggested that the alleged 27 million year cycle may coincide with the solar system periodically passing through the main plane of the Milky Way, where that movement through a greater concentration of stars could perturb the Oort cloud and send lots of asteroids into the inner solar system. So, in a nutshell, while there may be something periodic going on that has been captured in Earth's geological record, it's certainly not clinching evidence of the existence of Nemesis. Indeed, critics of the Nemesis hypothesis argue that if Nemesis is there and periodically tossing asteroids our way, it should itself be subject to gravitational perturbations due to other passing stars, which could potentially knock it out of its tenuous orbit with the Sun, or otherwise at least cause some variation in its periodic effects. Moreover, to have such a predictable effect on Earth, it must presumably send a huge flood of objects towards the inner solar system every 27 million years, since Earth isn't that big a target, but still, allegedly, gets hit every time. And so to have such a substantial effect, surely Nemesis itself must be pretty substantial. But here we are, well into the 21st century, where we do have the technology to detect even a small brown dwarf that's just 1.5 light years away, and no. This may be a very faint chance that we might have missed it, and we'll still pick it up one day, but this is definitely not something to hold your breath for.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. The universe is full of things we're yet to discover, and no doubt the solar system has a few surprises left too. Although they might be genuine surprises, rather than confirmations of any current hypotheses, which are based on scant data. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to confirm a scantily clad hypothesis, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll uncover it for you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.